Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman with Jeffrey Fawcett, PhD. We come to you weekly with a critical, independent voice on the politics and practice of health. There are so many ways to wreck your health. Now, all you have to do is eat. Since it first started creeping into our food supply with Monsanto's genetically modified seed stock not more than 15, 20 years ago, we've seen the crops take over our food supply. Monsanto has even sued farmers when their crops are contaminated by drift for not paying for their seeds. For many years, author Jeffrey Smith, founder of the Institute for Responsible Technology, has been sounding the alarm. His new film, Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives, is the subject of today's program. After today, you'll never buy non-organic again. But beware, even Whole Foods has caved into the siren song of GMOs. Stay tuned to find out who's fighting to stop the intrusion of these frankenfoods. First, an editorial about this week's health news by Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett.
Thank you, Lena. When I first started paying attention to it, the emerging science of the human microbiome estimated 500 species of microorganisms live with us in our gut and on our skin. Recently, I saw that the estimate is now 20 times that. 10,000 species share our life. Each of us is a member of a very intimate ecology. That intimacy is illustrated by an article to be published in next week's Science Express. Although for some time we've understood a good deal about the role that our gut microbiome plays in a wide range of activities, digestion, immunity, and mood, to name a few, not so much has been known about our skin microbiome. This latest research examines how the microbial colonies that inhabit our skin help keep our innate immunity working well. Innate immunity, of course, is the general purpose response to a potential threat. Inflammation, for example, is part of our innate immune response. So it's not just our gut microbes that play a role in fighting off assaults. Our skin microbes do too. When our gut and skin microbes are out of balance, our innate immune system is out of balance, and the incidence of inflammatory diseases such as allergies and asthma increase. In fact, these diseases have been on the rise as populations have become more urbanized. To explain the connections, some researchers propose a biodiversity hypothesis, which is a descendant of the hygiene hypothesis. The hygiene hypothesis argues that as populations become more urbanized, they become cleaner in the sense that they are exposed to fewer microbes, and so their bodies are unable to develop the antibodies necessary to contend with provocative exposures. Antibodies are the product of the adaptive immune system, adaptations that are stimulated by an innate immune response. The biodiversity hypothesis argues that lack of exposure to a biologically diverse environment stunts the development of our microbiome. What follows is an inadequate development of our capacity to resist and recover from immune challenges. Biodiversity is also important on the small scale of your skin and gut. Remember that there are 10,000 species of microbes living with you in a cooperative and mutually supportive process. Of those numerous species, a few dominate, the lactobacillus and acidophilus of fermented foods and so forth. The remaining species, in contrast, are very low density. This form of microbial ecosystem is what's called a rare biosphere. The term rare biosphere was first developed in oceanography to describe the microbial ecosystems found in marine environments. I take great comfort in knowing that I have yet another intimate connection with the life of the seas. But to return to biodiversity and our microbiome, there's good reason to believe that destruction of species and the simplification of ecosystems may seem to be overtaking us, in addition to being an environmental, food, and social justice issue, is also a health issue. So, want to improve your health? Grow a rich, resilient, diverse ecosystem. Into this picture, I want to introduce something that's going to add to your anxiety. Researchers are fast at work in a field called synthetic life. You're familiar, of course, with organisms that have been genetically engineered. That is, a piece of DNA, often from an entirely different species, is slipped into the genome of a cell. Synthetic organisms are built from scratch. What's troubling is that these new creatures come literally out of nowhere, or more accurately, out of someone's imagination. Genetically modified organisms are enough of a worry when it comes to biodiversity, but synthetic life, if released into the environment, could be worse because it has no biological context at all. Scientists are worrying about synthetic life. They're having conferences and establishing protocols and standards and so on. I sure hope they don't make a mistake. I was watching a flock of birds the other day, swirling through the air at breakneck speed, a fluid of cries and feathers. I'm confident none of those birds flies thinking it's a member of the flock. Each one, no doubt, sees things and makes decisions from its own perspective. I'm feeling a little nervous. I think I'll fly over there. Meanwhile, a whole set of environmental forces are at work on the flock, forces that neither the flock nor any of its birds can influence, let alone control, guiding them toward good things and away from bad things, they hope. The people who dream up things like synthetic life are in a flock that looks at science as something that's supposed to make the world better. They don't seem to understand that the world and better are contested terrain. I prefer flocks that view science as revealing what's in the world, like how many species of microbes are hard at work protecting me from illness. A transcript of this editorial is available at yourownhealthandfitness.org. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Take care of yourself.
Jeff Fawcett is a political economist, writer, and health integrationist who produces this show with me and is primary author of our book, Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health. And now to the topic for today's show, which is GMO, it's what's for dinner. And our guest is Jeffrey, spelled slightly differently than Jeff Fawcett, Jeffrey Smith. He is the founder of the Institute for Responsible Technology. As I mentioned, he's been sounding the alarm on GMOs for many years and has written a variety of books, which I will tell you the names of in as fast as I can get it on the screen, since I was neglectful in getting these names. Well, Jeffrey, why don't you remind us of the names of your previous books and films?
Seeds of Deception.
Yes.
And Genetic Roulette.
Yeah, those are two. And you also have another film.
Yes.
That you did earlier that I have. Okay.
I have a film coming out actually in August called Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives.
Okay. Yes, and that's the film we're going to be... That's the film that we're going to be discussing today, so thank you for that. Let's start, before we get into some of the specifics. The GMOs are very much in the news right now, so let's start by talking about, briefly, how these new foods have been sneaking into our food supply despite the public's resistance to them.
Well, it came originally by way of deception. The FDA was told by the White House to promote biotechnology, and so they brought in Michael Taylor, Monsanto's former attorney, to be in charge of FDA policy at the time they were creating the GMO policy. And his policy completely lied about what they knew and didn't know about GMOs. It claimed that the agency wasn't aware of any information showing that GMOs were significantly different, and therefore no testing or labeling was necessary, and GMOs could be put on the market without even the FDA being informed. And it was by companies like Monsanto who told us that PCBs, Agent Orange, and DDT were safe.
Right.
7 years later, the documents were from the FDA's own files had to be made public because of a lawsuit, and it showed that the overwhelming consensus among the scientists at the FDA was exactly the opposite. And they had warned repeatedly that GMOs were dangerous and could create all sorts of diseases, allergens, toxins, etc. And now we're getting an indication, a very strong indication, that they are absolutely correct.
Now, what seems to be in the news, what's new, is that a number of municipalities and cities and states are trying to label GMOs. Is that correct? Is that the newest news about the movement, the resistance against them?
I think it's a sign of the growing tipping point of consumer rejection, and that 20 different states have had labeling bills introduced. None have yet passed, but of course what's happening with Prop 37 in California means that Monsanto lobbyists won't be able to stop it, but it'll be they're going to try a big different disinformation campaign to try and get Californians to vote against their best self-interest.
Now, part of the reason you're here in California is to speak in a bunch of events. Is there a website that people can go to see where you're going to be speaking while you're here?
Yes, at responsibletechnology.org, which is at the Institute for Responsible Technology's website. We have a free newsletter, we have videos and audios, okay. And of course the tour.
So in terms of finding the tour, again, give out the website one more time. It'll also be on our website.
ResponsibleTechnology.org.
And then I've been told by the local group who's doing an event here in Marin County that you can go to, for this event only, labelgmos.org/events. So if people want to hear you speak while you're here, those are the ways to find out where you're going to be. Now, what's interesting that you explained in the film what the mechanisms are that cause harm. And one of the primary things that happens with exposure to these new genetically altered microbes and bacteria and various things is that they damage the GI tract to the point where the mucosal barrier leaks. And that means that particles of proteins and things get into the bloodstream and causes inflammation and allergies. This is something that's always happened, but now with the introduction of this BT toxin, it's happening in a way that's far worse and more ferocious and widespread. Can you explain the mechanisms here? What is the BT toxin?
BT toxin is a toxin that comes from soil bacteria, and if you gather it up and spray it on plants, it'll break open the stomach of certain insects and kill them by, drilling holes, essentially, in their stomach lining or in their cells. Now, the genetic engineers have taken the gene that produces this toxin and put it into corn and cotton so that the plants do the killing themselves, and they claimed that the toxin had no effect on humans or mammals, was destroyed during digestion, and all that turns out to be wrong. This year, a study showed that the BT toxin gathered from Monsanto's corn did, in fact, drill holes in human cells, causing leakage. And a study last year in Canada found that the toxin had not only survived digestion, but made it into the bloodstream of 93% of the pregnant women tested and 80% of their unborn fetuses. If it does, in fact, drill holes, then it can not only create gut permeability, but it might also pass the blood-brain barrier of the fetus and cause havoc in the brain, which you have no idea what kind of developmental disorders might be resulting from that. But even if we just look at the leaky gut, as you mentioned, there's a lot of evidence and a lot of scientific support that such a thing would lead to allergens or allergies, to autoimmune disease, to inflammation, possibly autism, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, a whole list of diseases are now related to leaky gut.
One of the things that's really shocking about the information in your film, Genetic Roulette, is that some of these symptoms, like leaky gut, and some of the early symptoms that you discuss are things that are being also caused by other things that are in the environment. There are other biohazards and toxins in the environment and other exposures like the microwave exposures also are causing some of these blood-brain barrier breaches, and they can cause an increased inflammation. So when you layer all these layers on top of layers, it sort of leads you back to how you begin the film, which is that Americans are incredibly unhealthy now. And the other interesting thing is that having gut damage and having the flora in your gut and nutrients disturbed, as this BT toxin does, also leads to obesity. So
it's an amazing array of diseases and disorders that this one technology can create. And the name of the film, Genetic Roulette, as you know, there's a roulette wheel that spins and it lands on different diseases and disorders and explains how these diseases may be exacerbated by GMOs. What we're seeing, it's a very interesting parallel that I've noticed as I've traveled and spoken about GMOs for 16 years. What I see now, that now we have thousands of doctors prescribing non-GMO diets, we're getting interviews with the patients and the doctors, and we're finding a very similar thing, that patients get better when they get off of GMO foods, and the same type of symptoms improve in them improve in livestock and pets that are switched to non-GM, and those symptoms are the same ones suffered by laboratory animals that eat GM compared to their controls, and those are the same symptoms that are on the rise in the U.S. population. So this is a very strong nexus or correlation of information, and what's very, very telling is that there's scientific reasons why these particular diseases may be the ones that are caused or exacerbated by GMOs.
Well, since you were, I think this is a good segue to talking about the rise in autism, because in autism, as some people may know or may have learned from the research on it, is that gut inflammation is one of the primary deep-rooted symptoms that children and young people with autism develop, and it's part of what makes the condition worse. And so it's remarkable that where we used to just be able to change the diet of a kid with autism and have their symptoms abate and back off, now that isn't enough, because if there are any genetically modified organisms in their food supply at all, their guts won't heal. So this is terribly important for, and we see the same inflamed guts, the same symptoms in, as you said, livestock. So
I've talked to several parents of autistic children who've taken their kids off of GMOs and found improvements either in the GI tract issues or behavior or generally both. And these include medical doctors whose kids have autism. And in one case, there was a woman who used to say that her son was 80% healed from autism or recovered, and he was eating 80% organic. And she said this a few times, and all of a sudden she realized, oh my God, mm-hmm. those are the same numbers. And so she took her child 100% off of the GMOs, 100% organic, and said that was what closed the gap for her. Mm-hmm. And it was very telling, because it's remarkable. I mean, it was kind of shocking to me when I first started interviewing the patients from doctors that were prescribing non-GMO diets, how dramatic the change was, where irritable bowel disease, colitis, weight gain or weight problems, skin problems, etc., within a few days or in some cases a few weeks.
It's remarkable. The other thing we're seeing now with the Roundup Ready glyphosate, this is incredibly genotoxic, and it's causing actual birth defects. So that's fairly horrifying. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, the major reason why they genetically engineer crops is for making weeding easier. And so it comes down to this, that farmers can spray Roundup over Roundup Ready crops like soybeans, corn, cotton, canola, sugar beets, and alfalfa. And the genetically engineered crop survives Roundup, whereas all the other crops die. But the Roundup gets absorbed into the plant, and it concentrates in the food portion, and it's consumed by us. Now, Roundup has been known for three decades to be cause of birth defects, and it has been hidden in some of the research that just came out this year. And with where Roundup is sprayed in Argentina, they can have as much as a 70-fold increase in birth defects. But it's not just the spray of Roundup that can potentially cause birth defects, the ingestion of it. And so we have in the film a number of farmers who've switched their animals from GM feed to non-GM feed. In the case of Roundup Ready Soy, which is drenched with Roundup, a Danish farmer had 13 deformed birth defects, live births, in the previous year when he was using GM soy. And when he switched to non-GM soy, the birth defects disappeared, as did the deaths from ulcers and bloat and lack of appetite, as did the sometimes fatal diarrhea. That whole diarrhea episode that he was dealing with for years disappeared in 2 days. Antibiotic use dropped by 2/3. And these are not untypical. Another farmer from Iowa didn't switch out of the GM soy yet because there's no available non-GM soy, but he was able to switch to the non-GM corn, and his antibiotic use and medicine went way down, and the behavior of the animals changed significantly, and it was like, for them, a revelation, because the behavior returned to what it had been before they ever started with the GM corn 14 years ago.
Now, one of the things that's interesting about the animal studies that they did is that they were feeding, for instance, rats, which are usually the unlucky recipients of being tested on. They're the ones that get being used a lot. Poor creatures, they're very intelligent animals. But one of the things I wondered is how much soy rats eat, because some of the things that they, some of the ways they got sick could have been also just from eating soy. I mean, soy is an estrogen and it's goitrogenic. It affects the thyroid. So, you know, are these animals, were the controls done so that some animals were eating regular, you know, organic soy and others were eating the GMO soy? Was there a distinction between the two?
Yeah, there's always a case where there's a control that eats the non-genetically engineered soy. So in the case of Moscow experiment, for example, when the female rats were fed GM soy before they conceived, more than half of their babies died within 3 weeks. But the groups whose mothers ate non-GM soy only lost 10%. And for the GM group, they were also smaller and could not reproduce. Similarly, the hamster study there, by the third generation on the GM soy, most of the hamsters lost the ability to have babies. Their infant mortality was 4 or 5 times that of controls, and many had hair growing in their mouths.
There's a mystery organism that you mentioned that's like a fungus that causes these fertility disruptions and birth defects. One of the things, I mean, have they identified it or named it yet? Do they even know what it is yet, the researchers?
It's new to science. It's very, very tiny. You see it in an electron microscope, and it looks like a fungus, but it's the size of a virus, and they've never categorized or seen anything like it before in science. But it's in high concentrations in crops that are sprayed with Roundup, and it's in high concentrations in the aborted fetal tissue of animals that have miscarriages. And when they take the organism and they apply it to a pregnant chicken in a laboratory, it kills the embryo within 48 hours.
Good grief.
And it turns out that there's basically an epidemic of infertility and miscarriages among livestock in the United States. And when farmers and ranchers have very, very high levels of it, typically if they send out aborted fetal tissue or semen for the laboratory, they find high concentrations of this organism. And I wouldn't be talking about this organism unless a letter to Secretary Vilsack by an expert was leaked onto the Internet last year. When that happened, I could then speak about what I had known about, and that is that we may be facing what he described as an emergency where the fertility of mammals, possibly humans, would be affected by the dramatic effects of Roundup, which is now, Roundup is practically omnipresent because of its use in Roundup-ready crops. There was more than 500 million pounds more use of herbicides since GMOs were introduced 16 years ago.
That's the dirty secret that we'll talk about at the end. But can you say his name, the researcher?
Don Huber. And Don Huber is a professor emeritus from Purdue University, and he was also a retired colonel, where he worked with the military agencies to protect Americans from the threat of outbreaks of disease, both man-made and natural. So he's quite an expert at evaluating disease threats, and he said, based on his experience, this is of high-risk nature.
One of the really sinister things about these organisms and the Roundup and these seeds that are Roundup ready and the crops that come out of it and stuff is that there's an effect that happens, which is a chelating effect, which binds up most of your minerals and most of your vitamins. In other words, as you say, it hugs it, but it basically means that they're not. It chelating means it grabs these things and causes them to be flushed out of your system in your excrement. So animals and people eating them are developing very severe nutrient deficiencies, and it's very important for people to understand that when you make that choice between, for instance, a chicken that's organic and a chicken that's natural, that has no antibiotics supposedly and stuff, is that they are all being fed GMO feed now. So unless you're getting organic, you're taking a risk of eating it. Now, what happens to people when they eat animals that have been fed these foods?
It's a very good question. We don't have a lot of evidence to draw from. We do know that among the memos that were made public from the FDA, that the Center for Veterinary Medicine warned very, very explicitly that eating the animals that have been fed GMOs or drinking their milk carried unique risks. We know that with animals, they can bioaccumulate toxins, and so animals might have a higher toxic dose than the plants that they're eating. And we know that the animals are eating Roundup-ready crops as their primary source of nutrition, and Roundup, as you mentioned, it chelates or binds with nutrients, making them unavailable. So veterinarians who are sending the organs of stillborn calves and others and dead animals off for evaluation are finding a nearly universal deficiency in certain key nutrients like manganese. So the plants are sick and weak. The animals that eat the plants are sick and weak. We eat the plants and animals, and we also get a healthy dose or an unhealthy dose of Roundup, which can further chelate or tie up nutrients that are in our system. So it's a real perfect storm for disease and weakness.
I might mention also that when Vilsack was approached by Dr. Huber, is his name?
Huber. That's right, Huber.
That when Huber wrote him, Vilsack simply didn't respond. I mean, there was just a big silence on the other end.
It's typical, but it's tragedy. I mean, here was one of the most qualified men in the world to write a letter to the Secretary of Agriculture saying, this is an emergency, please do not approve Roundup Ready alfalfa yet until we've evaluated the role that Roundup plays in this potential disaster. He was ignored. Once it was leaked onto the internet, then the obligatory USDA contacted Huber. He gave the names of some people to follow up with, and they never did for 6 months. And so it tells you that we can't look to the government for a bailout, even when it's a very dangerous situation with scientific evidence behind it.
There are things happening to dairy products that are causing an increase of the bovine growth hormone in animals. So am I to understand that even if they're not adding the bovine growth hormone, well, no, in fact, they are adding, I guess. But anyway, can you speak to what sorts of really scurrilous things are happening to the dairy supply?
Well, when you add genetically engineered bovine growth hormone and it's injected into dairy cows to increase milk supply, it changes the cow and it changes the milk. The milk has more pus, more antibiotics, and more bovine growth hormone. But the greatest danger, actually, according to the scientists, is the IGF-1 in the milk. In fact, Monsanto's own scientists, I'm told by a former Monsanto scientist, when three of them found so much IGF-1 in the milk, these three Monsanto scientists refused to drink milk thereafter, and none was organic. One bought his own cow. It was an amazing story, but IGF-1, for those that don't know, it causes cells to multiply rapidly, and so it's sort of like pouring gasoline on fire of cancer. And premenopausal women with high levels of IGF-1 are 7 times more likely to develop breast cancer. Men with high levels are 4 times more likely to develop prostate cancer. It's implicated in colon cancer and other cancers. And it's in much higher levels in the milk from cows treated with genetically engineered bovine growth hormone.
Yeah, so IGF-1 is insulin-like growth factor, so it's a sort of metabolite that you can give you a sense of how much growth hormone is on board. And when growth hormone gets high, just like its name, growth hormone, it increases the growth of cells and the turnover, and people use it as an anti-aging drug. And it's given to children who are not growing fast enough and things like that. But you have to be very careful about how much of this is in your system, and there are real concerns about even supplementing. And as you're correct, that as people age, when they have high levels of IGF-1 in their system, often we see that those are the people that have cancers, and cancers that are metastasizing very fast. So that's a good test to run on a regular basis to make sure you're not. And obviously avoiding GMO foods at all costs, and especially dairy, is absolutely essential. I'm pausing because we need to take a break. We might as well take a break now since we have a pause here. You're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I'm on the phone with Jeffrey Smith, who is he is founder, actually, of the Institute for Responsible Technology. Their website will be on our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, and he is in California speaking at a number of events, and you can go to their website to see where those events are. Again, if you want to search on the Institute for Responsible Technology under events, you'll find where he's speaking. I'm Lena Berman, Jeff Fawcett sitting by here. We're going to break briefly and come back to this interview on GMO. It's What's for Dinner. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with you with the rest of this interview. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I'm here with Jeff Fawcett. We're on the phone today with Jeffrey Smith from the Institute for Responsible Technology. We're speaking about GMO, it's what for dinner, and I will remind you that Jeffrey Smith is going to be speaking in California, and if you want to find out where, in Northern California, you can go to, in any case, why don't you give out your website again?
Sure.
If you would.
ResponsibleTechnology.org, and I'll be all over the Northern California this week and a little bit of next, and then going off to Southern California soon after that.
Okay. And some of you will be hearing the shows in different areas and at different times, so always check the website if you're interested in catching up and seeing if he's available. Visit our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, certainly for those links, and for easier extended access to our over 500 archive shows. You can check out our library card feature and find information about our practice, a free stream of this week's show, an hour-long stream, and our book. Lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org, or email us if you want at admin@ yourownhealthandfitness.org. So the other thing that's extremely frightening and sad about all of this is that the people who are most at risk here are children.
Yes.
And part of it's because they're developing and their cells are growing fast and they eat more. But they're also targeted in their foods by more of these. They're eating more processed foods.
You know, I was giving a presentation in Marin County last year with a pediatrician, Michelle Perro, who's one of the top pediatricians in America for 5 years running. And she saw a picture in research, I think probably from my book Genetic Roulette, showing changed architecture in the walls, the cell walls of the stomach and the intestines. And she looked at it and she said, uh-oh, we've got a problem. And what she was thinking was, this is the kind of changes that I'm seeing in the children that I'm treating, where they're either unable to gain weight, so it's failure to thrive, or they're allergic to everything, or they can't hold food down, or they're constantly crying. She said there's an unprecedented explosion of digestive disorders in children, and of course there's also a bunch of developmental disorders. Children eat more per pound. The toxins that may be able to be handled well by adults are much higher per pound in the children. They eat a lot of processed foods. Our institute tested the soy in soy infant formula and found it was about half genetically engineered. Of course, the milk from the other formulas comes from milk from cows treated with bovine growth hormone, and there's also products of corn, so corn sweeteners in there. So they're getting a heavy dose of genetically engineered products when they grow up, and I think that that's a very, very serious problem, exacerbating a whole host of disorders.
Including obesity in the long run, too, because of the destruction of the microbiome in the gut and all that, too.
Yeah, we hardly talked about the guts, and I know Jeff mentioned that at the beginning.
Yeah.
If you eat Roundup in the crops, Roundup is an antibiotic, and so
right.
It might kill off some of the gut bacteria. Now, there's a few of the problems we didn't get to in the film because we were running out of time, but one of the things is that we could be completely messing up the gut bacteria by eating the Roundup, and that happens in cows when they eat Roundup. It kills off some beneficial bacteria in the gut, and that beneficial bacteria normally keeps the population of botulism low, and so botulism might explode as a result, which ends up higher in the levels in the livestock, higher levels in humans and babies, and it's now linked to sudden infant death syndrome. So there's all sorts of tie-ins with this very complicated system when you throw so much poison in.
Boy, I'll say. Now, if people simply avoid soy and they avoid corn, is that it? Is it that simple? Just avoid soy and corn that's not organic? Isn't it creeping into other foods too?
Well, you say it's not organic. There's actually four ways to avoid GMOs. Buying organic is one of them. buying products that say non-GMO, particularly non-GMO Project Verified, which is a third-party system that requires testing. It has a uniform standard. We have the verified products listed on our shopping guide at non-GMOshoppingguide.com. We also have an iPhone application that's free called Shop No GMO. And then you can avoid the at-risk ingredients, which they're not just the soy and corn. You also have sugar from sugar beets. You have canola and cottonseed oils. And then you have some Hawaiian papaya, also papaya from China. Those are the two at-risk sources. A little zucchini, a little crookneck squash. And then you have the animal feed, which means that the milk and the meat might be a problem. And, of course, the dairy from animals injected with bovine growth hormone. All of this, we make it easier for people with our non-GMO shopping guide. And if there's a labeling in California, which if we pass Prop 37 in the fall, then it'll be much, much easier for people to avoid GMOs.
Yikes. I have to say I'm sort of speechless about all of this because I've been watching this develop over time, and it's just astonishing how they've gotten away with this. Now, one of the big myths about genetically modified organisms is we've been doing this all along. We've been, you know, we had to hybridize wheat and stuff to make it edible. So what's the difference?
Well, you know, when they looked at the difference between hybridization and GMOs at the FDA, the scientists as a whole said the genetic engineering is different and leads to different risks. I talked to a UC Davis professor that helped develop the first genetically engineered crop, the Flavor Saver tomato, and she commented on this myth that was put out there by the biotech industry, and she rolled her eyes and said, and of course it's not an extension of natural breeding. There are all sorts of unique dangers that occur as a result of the very process of genetic engineering, irrespective of what gene you insert. In fact, it can switch on genes that are normally silent, like it did with corn. So Monsanto's corn has a switched-on gene that now produces an allergen that's in our food, that's in our corn supply that was never there before.
And corn is pretty allergic to begin with.
Yeah, and then, of course, the soy, the cooked GM soy, has a known allergen, which it's a normal soy, but in the cooked soy, it's as much as 7 times higher, and that's all part of the massive collateral damage that occurs as a result of this unique process that was never happens in nature. It's done in a laboratory where you take a gene, make millions of copies. First, you add a virus to it. You take generally bacterial genes, put it into a gun, shoot it into a plate of millions of cells, and clone the result. It's a lot of things, but it's not sexual reproduction.
Yeah, it's the only thing not found in nature that's fun is maybe some colors, but even those are made with chemicals, so you have to be careful. But yes, the irony of the situation is that the two foods that are the most loaded with this are the two most allergic foods on the planet, along with wheat. So we should hold on to our seats. I'll probably be doing wheat soon, too. I just want to remind people once again that you are listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. Jeff Fawcett is sitting by, and we're on the phone with Jeffrey Smith, who is founder of the Institute for Responsible Technology. The Institute for Responsible Technology's website is, again, instituteforresponsibletechnology.org.
ResponsibleTechnology.org.
ResponsibleTechnology.org. And we are talking about GMOs. It's what's for dinner. So some of the other questions that I think beg asking, now, most of the ways to avoid GMO products is to avoid processed foods from the middle of the, you know, to stick with whole foods, although now you're saying it's sneaking into crookneck squash. But for the most part, you want to stay away from foods that are processed because you don't have control over what ingredients they're adding, and there's always going to be corn in everything. And the other horrifying thing is that the WIC program is using all GMO foods that they're giving to poor people, including infant formula.
Well, yeah, so we just looked at the infant formula. We called every single state to find out if they what they were offering in terms of the infant formula, and every bit of it is genetically engineered to the general infant population. And so they got 2 million infants on genetically engineered infant formula in the United States, and we have a new generation that's at risk for all sorts of problems. It's quite dangerous.
I don't know if you can address this, but I have been told, or I've read recently, that Whole Foods has now caved in and is using GMO products in their 365 brand.
Actually, it's different than that. They committed to remove GM products from their 365 brand and from all of their home brands, and they've enrolled them into the non-GMO project. Now, not all of them have been verified yet, and so as long as they're just enrolled and not yet verified, they can't make a statement about the content. But they are actually one of the pioneers, major organizations that have made that choice.
Oh, well, that's good.
But you can't necessarily go to Whole Foods and buy anything off the shelf and assume that it's non-GMO. That's absolutely the case where they have a lot of genetically modified products in there. And many health food stores do, but a lot of health food stores are very conscious, and many of them are supporting the California Right to Know ballot initiative, the Prop 37, which will demand labeling. Whole Foods hasn't yet supported it, but we're hoping that they do. But many other California chains and in mom-and-pop stores and many of the vendors and others are supporting this very, very important Right to Know, which is really a watershed moment. I've been working on this for 16 years, and there's nothing that's ever come up like this that could have such huge ramifications
for
our side.
Well, California has always been a big supporter of no GMOs. I mean, the movement here has always been huge. It's been smashed, but
there's going to be an attempt right now. I mean, there's ads going out trying to lie that Prop 37 is going to raise the cost of groceries. It's completely a lie. They say that it's going to increase lawsuits. It's completely a lie. I mean, these guys have had decades of lying. They've been convicted of lying. They've had to pay fines of hundreds of millions of dollars in lying, and they still lie, and it's amazing. And we have the evidence, the hard evidence, which was part of the challenge in the film of Genetic Roulette, to sort of expose the lies. And one thing that we haven't discussed is that sometimes when the scientists discover the truth, they're jumped on, they're attacked, they're fired or gagged, or they're told that their methodology is a problem. We interview in the film some people who have been attacked, and Canadian government official who was fired when he tried to get in the way of the whole industrial food process.
Yeah, the South Asian man from Canada.
Yeah, Shiv Chopra.
Yeah, no, this is, well, of course, this is happening in so many different areas. We're seeing this in people fighting about the lies that are being told about nuclear, both energy and weapons and stuff like that. So there's a lot of this going on. I think that we are losing ground in terms of how much influence voters have, because there's so much money on the other side and the money is influencing things, but it doesn't mean that we can't keep pushing. I mean, we've seen consumers push back on things and actually make a difference, and I think if anyone can do it, California can, so hopefully.
And that's really why I'm here. In fact, that's also why I timed the release of the film Genetic Roulette, because it's something that people can pass on to other people. Because not everyone's going to remember, 10% of what they hear in this conversation, but they're going to remember the feeling, and they're going to want to say, how do I tell my friends? And so we have that in books, we have it in pamphlets, we have it in online resources, but this is injecting new information, the most up-to-date information, where you have people who are affected by GMOs, livestock are being affected by GMOs, scientists, etc., speaking the truth. And so I'm going to be on tour basically, essentially between now and Election Day,
right,
and bringing this kind of information out and the materials out that people can pass along.
The area on your website where you can look up foods again is?
It's non-GMOshoppingguide.com. It's its own website, non-GMOshoppingguide.com. And for those that have iPads or iPhones, we have a free application called Shop No GMO.
Yeah,
and that's very, very helpful.
Actually, I hope people are not using wireless technologies to get to this. But anyway, the point is, in terms of meat, this is another slippery slope. If a retailer like Whole Foods decides to go non-GMO, they're going to have a very difficult time with the meat that's not certified organic.
It's true.
Yeah.
And because if it doesn't, the way to avoid meat that's been eating, animals that are eating GMOs, is either certified organic, wild-caught,
yeah,
or 100% grass-fed, which would mean,
yes,
also no alfalfa. So grass-fed, parentheses, no alfalfa. And that's it, because otherwise, if you eat naturally raised and it doesn't say 100% grass-fed, that naturally raised can include genetically engineered feed, especially at the end of their lives.
Ew. It's also making the animals suffer, which is another reason not to do this.
You know, we have some of the farmers talk about that. And farmers don't generally know that GMOs are the cause. We talked to one cattle farmer, and he actually has a cattle feedlot with 5,000 head, so he fattens them up before they're slaughtered. And he said, we didn't realize it at the time, but the more we were feeding the GM corn, the more the cattle would die. And it wouldn't be out in the first 60 to 80 days, but then they'd lose one or two a week, and they didn't know why, until they switched to non-GM corn. And not only did the death rate go down, but the pneumonia rate and other infectious diseases went down. The food intake went up. I mean, a lot of animals avoid GMOs when given a choice, and now we found out that when they switch to non-GM feed, or even a large percentage of it, then they'll eat more.
But I also understand that the animals' moods are improved and the animals are happier. So if they're going to have a short life, at least let them have a happy life where they're not plagued with illness, you know?
And the word happiness, I'm glad you said that. I heard so many farmers and veterinarians say that their animals were happier.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, people who are raising pigs and cows and also doing laboratory studies, they use the word happier animals.
Well, and pets are very affected by this because these GMO products are in all sorts of pet foods, all the science diet type foods, most of the processed foods have GMOs in them. You have to be very careful what you feed your pets
in
for
the
same
film
reason.
Is Michael Fox, who writes a syndicated column, Animal Doctors, who's got 30 to 40 million readers. And when GMOs were introduced, he started getting letters from all over the country about my cat and dog having, you know, diarrhea or itching or other allergies. And he said, get them off the genetically modified corn and soy, and voila, they got better. Whereas those that went to veterinarians locally and got put on the scientific diets, et cetera, they were still suffering from the itching and the diarrhea and the allergies and the whole gastrointestinal disorders because these prescription diets still had the genetically modified soy and corn, and the veterinarians were not putting the two together.
Now, Monsanto has promoted a bunch of GMO myths, and there's one myth that keeps getting used for all sorts of things. I mean, the myth that there's not enough food on the planet, and that to prevent people from starving to death, we have to introduce... This was the argument for monoculture, for coming up with this industrial agriculture in the first place, and now they're doing this again. There's no evidence that's the problem with people getting food. They're not starving because there's not enough food. They're starving because of political situations, as the researcher from the South Asian researcher whistleblower from Canada pointed out. So do you want to go over? I mean, the other myths are that this stuff helps. So why don't you just bust all the myths about how it doesn't help?
And that's a good one to start, because they spent $250 million 15 years ago trying to convince Americans that GMOs would feed the world. And yet the most comprehensive evaluation of how to feed the world, what's called the ISTAD report, which was 2,500 pages, over 400 scientists, signed on by 58 countries, sponsored by the UN, etc., said the current generation of GMOs has nothing to offer to feed the world or eradicate poverty. And the Union of Concerned Scientists report failure to yield shows that GMOs do not increase yield. In fact, ecological agriculture and environmentally friendly methods applied in over 12 million farms around the world showed a 79% increase in yields. But again, it's not yields alone, because we have more food per person than any time in human history. It's generally poverty and access, which is the cause or the major part of the problem. Now, they also claim that GMOs would reduce the use of agricultural chemicals. New information that's come out just 2 weeks ago showed about 527 million pound increase in herbicides over the first 16 years. And although there's been a decrease in over 100 million pounds of sprayed pesticide, because some of the crops that are genetically engineered produce their own pesticides from inside every cell, the amount of pesticide that they're producing within their own cells is at least double that which is displaced, and sometimes as much as 12 times that. So the overall amount of pesticide being dumped into our ecosystem on a per acre basis is much higher on the pesticide side and on the herbicide as well.
Isn't it also the case that when you eat these foods, you end up having pesticides, that you start forming them, or you carry them?
This is one of the highest yuck factor aspect than when I give a talk. And so here's what it is. The only human feeding study ever published showed that genes can transfer into the DNA of our gut bacteria and may continue to function. So if we eat a corn chip that produces a BT toxin and the gene that produces that toxin transfers into the DNA of the bacteria living inside us, it might convert it into living pesticide factories. And this might explain why 93% of pregnant women in Canada had the BT toxin in their blood. The researchers figured it might be the milk and meat of animals that were feeding on the BT corn, but because they had to figure out some way that they were eating it a lot because it would be washed out of the blood so quickly, they needed to have a constant source of new BT in order to have such a high percentage of people with this poison in their bloodstream. However, if they're making BT toxin in their own gut bacteria, that might explain better why it's in so many people and even in the unborn fetuses.
The argument that Monsanto makes for wanting to do what it's doing, aside from its justification, its sort of general, its mission, is very similar to the mission that medicine, heroic medicine, had when they began to take over from the old traditional forms of healing, you know, with herbs and various things. When we went to using heroic medicine, it was invasive. I mean, it was, the idea was, it's heroic, it's invasive, and you use all these things. And the reason this shift happened so way back, you know, in, gosh, I don't know which century, it was this shift to thinking that nature was foolish and stupid and had to be conquered. And that's obvious from the way we behaved in every single way possible in history, you know, with human beings, with technology, believing. And it's still happening because Monsanto's ideas, there should be no natural food. It's always better to have this synthetic, you know, or altered sort of thing. Now, the problem here is that Monsanto has had an enormous amount of control for a very long time over what's going on in terms of seeds and various things. Because, you know, I read your earlier books, and I know that this has been going on for a very long time. And I would posit that this trend is not, it's happening in farming, it's happening in medicine, it's happening in other environmental areas. This idea of technology is better than what's natural. It strikes me that that's another illustration of how, in terms of technology, sometimes it's safer to back away from a precipice, which is where we are.
You know, I have to say that what you're saying is so accurate, but it's even worse. I mean, I want to be absolutely clear that their actual stated goal, according to their former consultant, Arthur Anderson, as stated in the San Francisco Biotech Conference in late January 1999, their stated goal, when they asked the executives what their goal for 15 to 20 years in the future was to genetically engineer 100% of all commercial seeds in the world and patent them and to have them offered along with their associated chemicals. And Anderson worked backwards from that goal to create the strategy and tactics to achieve it, to try and create a world where they were replacing nature. Now, the person that told me this said it was the most arrogant thing he had ever seen in his life and ever seen up to this point. And if you consider it, it's arrogant for so many reasons. It's the dismissal of nature, but also it's the dismissal of the biodiversity, because it really means that they're going to eliminate seed saving if they get their way for the 1.4 billion farmers that save seeds, with millions and millions of varieties that have been saved for generations to function the best in that particular climate and geography, and to narrow that down to the limited genetics produced by genetic engineering. And if you look at what's happening in India, where the Monsanto's BT cotton, the cotton that produces its own insecticide that breaks open the stomach of insects and kills them, it's not reliable. And people, many the farmers borrow heavily with high interest loans to pay for these magic seeds that don't work, and now an estimated 200,000 farmers have committed suicide over the last 10 years after buying Monsanto's BT cotton and not being able to pay back their loans.
Am I right in understanding that the new farm bill that's coming through, that all this so-called food safety stuff is protecting companies like Monsanto?
Oh, the current farm bill has absolutely horrible things in it. There's a rider in it that basically says that if a court tells the USDA not to allow a genetically engineered crop to be available because it's under, you know, it's going to go up to the appeal process, that it tells the USDA not only do they have to ignore the court order, but if anyone, a farmer, a company, et cetera, puts in a request, an official request for the GMO, it must be released. That's one rider, okay? So it basically destroys the balance of powers in the government. So you know how powerful Monsanto is there. The second rider basically says anything that's not approved within a certain narrow amount of time, and you can only have use a certain small amount of money, and no one else can look at the environmental impacts except the USDA, but you can't have much money to do it, and if you don't approve it by a certain time, it's automatically approved. And that it basically says if there's a small amount of contamination from even a dangerous GMO in the food supply, that becomes legal as well. So there's all sorts of incredible riders in there. There's another rider from someone that wants to eliminate the ability for states to have things like Prop 37, which would require GMOs to be labeled. It's saying the government, that the state government should have no jurisdiction over anything like that. It should be all the federal government. And you know what that means, because mm-hmm. that's where Monsanto has its strength.
It's money. Along with voting in California in November, what would you like citizens to be doing across the country, because this show will be heard in other venues, what would you like listeners to do aside from not buy these products? What else?
Well, I think the labeling thing in California is the key, but I think the other thing is this. We saw in Europe where a tipping point of consumer rejection knocked GMOs out of there in a very short amount of time. It's about 10 weeks from the time a gag order was lifted from a scientist. Over 700 articles were written within a month. GMOs became a marketing liability. They were kicked out. If we can get as little as 5% of U.S. shoppers avoiding GM ingredients in the United States, that will be a food industry sell signal that this brand of high-risk food that has no consumer benefit is starting to lose market share for these companies. They will get rid of it. So the key is, learn what is wrong with GMOs. Go to responsibletechnology.org. If you want to get a free newsletter, sign up for Spilling the Beans. If you want to join others around the country to get involved, sign up for the Tipping Point Network. If you want to become a speaker, take the online speaker training course. It's 10 hours. You can do it on your own. It's the kind of thing where we can create it ourselves without having to ask the government for a bailout. In fact, that's how it was kicked out of Europe, and that's why the biotech industry is more vulnerable than any of the other major problems we're facing, because it does not require policy change from the federal government for us to win.
Boy, I'm really glad you're here in California talking. You're a very powerful speaker. And again, it's responsibletechnology.org, and there are links to all these other things that you just mentioned there.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You can watch online movies. You can listen to audio, et cetera, et cetera. So responsibletechnology.org is the hub, and then you can also link from there to non-GMO shopping guide and sign up for the Tipping Point Network, et cetera.
And again, if people are in California, you can go to labelgmos.org/events for a local event, or you can check responsibletechnology.org website for getting a chance to see Jeffrey Fawcett. Oh, yeah, I knew I was going to do that at some point. Jeffrey Smith speaking. I want to thank you so much for your very important work and for joining us today. Thank you so much, Jeffrey Smith.
Thank you very much.
And I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. Visit our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, for easier extended access to our over 500 archive shows. Check out the changes to our library card feature. Find out about our practice, our free stream of this week's show, an hour-long stream, our book, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org, all spelled out. Or email us at admin@yourownhealthandfitness.org. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced by Lena Berman and Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.